There it goes. That's exactly what I thought was going to happen when I started a message on giving, that everybody was going to cry and say, oh, no, they're after my money. I got several cute stories in an email. This is page 3 of 4, and this was not from a Christian website, by the way. So, but it's a story of a $20 bill and a $1 bill. They were well worn, both the 20 and the 1. They were distressed from their life, and they arrived at the Federal Reserve Bank to be retired. And as they moved along the conveyor belt to be burned, they struck up a conversation. The $20 bill reminisced about its travels all over the country. I've had a pretty good life, it said. The $20 proclaimed, I've been to Las Vegas and Atlantic City and some of the finest restaurants in New York, performances on Broadway, and even a cruise on the Caribbean. Wow, said the $1 bill. You've really had an exciting life. So tell me, says the 20, where have you been throughout your lifetime? The $1 bill replies, well, I've been to the Methodist Church, the Baptist Church, and the Lutheran Church. The $20 bill interrupts him rudely and says, what's a church? That's a secular event. But sometimes the people in the world have a better understanding of giving in the church than the people in the church do. Like I told you yesterday, I was working on my house and I had the radio on in the garage and I heard a country western song where the guy thought he was doing really good because he's going to put an extra $5 in the church offering on Sunday. You know, I'm going to give the church an extra $5. And I think that's a lot of the times the attitude that comes across in church. So as we talk about giving and a mid-year report, there's really two messages on the back of your bulletin. The first one is a short message on giving. And then the second one is a mid-year report. I'm writing into the structure of being your pastor that in end of July or August, I'll give you a mid-year report, how we're doing. And then in February, when we wrap up the year, I'll give you an annual report of the year. So when we look at giving, I picked the smartest man and one of the richest men who ever lived, Solomon. And I picked the Lord Jesus Christ and a passage from Malachi for today's lesson. So when we talk about giving, what does the Bible say about money? Well, first of all, as you fill in your blanks, it says we're supposed to live in financial freedom. God's design, God's desire for you and I, and his teaching consistently through the Bible is to live in financial freedom. Now, in the 21st century, in the year that we live, is that the norm for people? To live out of debt, to live in financial freedom. The statistical average in our society is $12,000 to $15,000 in unassetted debt. That's the national average. People have $12,000 to $15,000 on their credit cards that they don't ever pay off. So if you're below that, you're a little better than average. If you're above that, you're a little worse than average. But if you have any debt, you're not living the way God wants you to live. He wants you to live in financial freedom. Now, we're to earn money honestly. When we talk about earning money, you should do that honestly. Then we should give generously. So you live in financial freedom. You earn money honestly, you give it generously, you spend it wisely, spend is your blank, and then lastly, you invest it carefully. And really, when you think about it, those are the only four things you can do with money. Earn it, give it, spend it, invest it. But those are the things that God says we should be doing with money. And so as we look at a message of giving, we're only going to talk about the second one today, but at some point in the future, I should hit on the rest of those. So, here's the main point to finish up your top part of that outline. God owns it, and you, what? You're the manager of it. When we get to the financial report of the church, we have thousands of dollars invested. And we have an individual that works for Edward Jones that manages that money for us. But we own it. They manage it for us. One of my favorite movies from a year or so ago was The Return of the King, the Lord of the Rings stories that Mr. Tolkien wrote, one of C.S. Lewis's good buddies. I just love that story. I'd love to watch those movies where there's actually really, really good guys who fight really, really, really bad guys. And even though the bad guys look overwhelming, the good guys win, you know. And there's two scenes in the Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, that I probably will carry with me for an extended period of time. In the concluding scene of that movie, the hosts of mankind are opposed by a mighty host of evil. And it looks like we're going to get our butts whipped today. And the king raises his sword and he says, you know, someday men are going to fall. Someday men are going to falter. Someday evil is going to win. But not today. And the whole, everybody's courage is restored and they all raise their sword. Wah! You know, and they end up beating the bad guys. And the other scene in it is earlier on in the movie, there is a steward of Gondor who is required to steward the king's kingdom. And there's a high throne way up on the top of these staircase. And then down in the middle of it is a throne where the steward of Gondor lives. But the steward of Gondor begins to think he's the king. And he's going to take over the kingdom and he turns evil. Kills his kids, does all kinds of bizarre stuff. But the point of the story is he was just supposed to manage the wealth. He wasn't supposed to think he was a kingdom. But that's the problem with most of us in money. We think we own it. You don't. You just manage it for him. And the better you manage it, the better you will be on the other side. So after you earn money honestly, God challenges you to give it generously. So you, number one, you earn it. Then number two, you give it. Then number three, you spend it. Number four, you invest it. But you should be doing all of those and actually in that order. You earn the money, then you give the money, then you spend the money, then you invest the money. So, do you believe in giving? If I took your checkbook and put it on the PowerPoint in front of everybody, scanned it, put it up there, would your checkbook say that you believed in giving? You could say you believe in giving, but when? Does it get to be the end of the week and you're in church and you're fumbling through your wallet and there's two fives and a ten left in there and you decide, oh, I got to go to lunch, so you give them the five? You know, because you know you got to go to lunch and even McDonald's is $13. When do you give? Do you give before or after you spend? What's your pattern? You need to look at these patterns in your life. In Proverbs, we looked at this earlier. Honor the Lord with the wealth, the first and best parts of your income. I did better reading it that time, didn't I? And then look at the rest of that, verse 10. Then your barns will be filled, your vats will overflow with fresh wine. So why do we give? Do we give to honor the Lord or to have our vats filled? You can't gimmick God. You can't trick God. God sees your heart when you give. If you give generously from your heart, then your barns will be full, your vats will be full. But you can't give to get. In our society, there's a lot of people on television that say, if you give me this, God will give you that. And it's a mathematical formula that if you give to me, you'll get that, and it's a lockstep incantation spell guaranteed gig. Doesn't work that way. No matter what those boys say, and they got a lot more money than we do. God looks at your heart, not at your actions when you give. So, Proverbs 3, 11 and 12. These are the next two verses. Do you know what they say? Right after it says, honor the Lord with the first and the best, then your vats will be full, then your wine press will run over. This is what he says. Do not reject the discipline of the Lord, my son, and do not resist his warning. Because the Lord warns the one he loves, even the father warns the son whom he is pleased. Here's the warning. If you don't honor me, with giving. If you don't give to me from your first fruits, from your best, then your barns will not be filled and your vats will not be run. You know, he goes on to say, it'll be like you got a hole in your pocket and your money leaks out all the time. It's what he says later on in Proverbs. So, here's what Jesus says about giving. So we looked at what the smartest guy says, the richest guy. You know, Solomon's intake was about $2.6 billion a year when he was king of Israel. Can you imagine what that's worth in the economy of before Christ's life? Can you imagine what $2.6 billion annual income would be like for you today? Think about it back then, when everybody was literally dirt poor. I mean, he was rich. Here's Jesus. He says, give and you'll receive. A large quantity, pressed together, shaken down, running over, will be put into your pocket. The standard you use for others will be applied to you. This is a cause and effect scripture. If you give, you will receive. The more you give, the more you will receive. But it's not a magic formula. It's a heart deal. Because you honor God and give, He will bless you. And the challenge is, the more you get, the more you give. And quite honestly, the more you get, the harder it is to keep up the consistent giving. It's easier when you only get $100 a week to give Him 10 bucks. But when you get $1,000, well, then you got to give Him 100. You get 10,000 a week, you got to give Him $1,000 a week. You know, it gets harder the more you get. When you give generously, then instead of running out of money, God multiplies your money. That's the way it works when you do it from your heart. So, when you run short consistently financially, the first thing you should do is look at your giving and ask the Lord to show you any attitudes or actions He wants to change. When Jules and I consistently run financially short, that's the first thing we look at. Are we giving like we should be? Because if we're giving like we should be, the right amount from the right heart attitude, then the Spirit of the Lord can bless us. But oftentimes, He'll use money to get your attention. He'll use a lot of stuff to get you to come to Him. So, how much would God suggest we give? On your outline, there's a blank. God's idea is 10% of your gross income. That's called a tithe. Abraham instituted that when he gave to Melchizedek, and it's still a biblical guideline, 10% of your gross income. Then giving is another 15% of your gross income. So, your range of giving should be a minimum of 10% to a maximum of 25%, according to the Jewish law. Now, when you think about that, here's a cute little saying. Tithing is a debt I owe. Giving is a seed I sow. Do you see where that goes on your outline? So in your outline, you got 10% up to 15% debt and seed. Here's the gig. Most theologians say that your 10% tithe you should give to the church. 10% of your gross, you should give that right back to the church. And your 15% in giving, you should invest that in other good, godly institutions and individuals other than your church. And of course, you can give that through your church as well. But a lot of times in my life, and it's much more fun and enjoyable to know you're investing in individuals' lives. So, let me show you what that would look like. Today's getting close to the end of the month, and Lori will probably give me two checks. Well, actually, she gives them to Jules. I don't really see them. She just gives them to Jules, and Jules puts them in the bank. But the church gives Julie and I a $1,200 housing allowance per month. I also receive a $1,900 a year salary as your pastor. So you add 12 and 19, that adds up to 31 or 37 to a year. Doris's grandson just got a new job out in the Phoenix Valley working at a Lutheran church as a youth pastor. Youth pastor is the bottom of the food chain, right? They're the lower levels. And he started at 38 plus medical insurance and benefits. You know, when you look at $37,000, that's the lower end of the food chain as far as pastoral salaries go. And I don't know how many of you had any idea what they pay me to learn this job. But that's it. So you take that amount of money, so what's my tithe? What's my tithe on that? If I make $310 a month, I should give back to the church. Or at the end of the year, I should be around $37,200. That's what I should be at the end of the year. Then I also give $75 to some local missions and $80 to international missions a month. So that's $155. So here's the illustration. If you make $31 a month, your tithe is $310. My giving is only at 5%, which is very low for me historically, but it's just the way it is now. One of the reasons I keep bringing missionaries in front of you is I need some good people to invest in. So when, you know, these young kids like the Food for the Hungry Girl comes through, you know, those are opportunities to give to them. So at the end of the giving, then I subtract my taxes. I'm self-employed. And every month Jewel sets a grand away, and every 3 months she sends it off to the government to pay my taxes. And then at the end of it, I have $1,635 to spend and invest. So when I get to the end of the year, I need a target when I get to my tax return to evaluate at the end of the year. How am I doing on my giving? I should be around $6,000. If I make $37,000, I should have about $6,000 or more on my tax return that I have receipts for giving and tithing. Does that make sense? So when you get your check, if you work for somebody who's nice enough to take your taxes and Social Security out, you look at your gross income, not your net income. Before taxes, how much did you make? And then when you look this time of year when you're working the overtime and everything, and you look how much the government takes in your overtime, you cry. But anyway, you give from the gross of that amount of money. So here's the conclusion. In Malachi 3:8, this is what he says. Will you rob God? Yet, you've robbed God. But you say, well, where have I robbed you, Lord? In tithes and offerings. If you are not honoring the Lord with a minimum of 10% of your gross, you're ripping him off. I would not steal anything from a gas station because I don't like jail. Been there a couple times. It's not a pleasant place. Got a degree in criminal justice. I'm not going to steal anything. But the last person that I would want to steal from is the God of the universe. So, you need to evaluate in your own life, what will I do about givings and tithes and offerings? In my life, do I want to have financial life or financial death? It's your call. You give from the heart, honoring God, you'll have life. You rob God, it'll kill you financially. Do you want to have a blessing? Do you want to be blessed with so much money it's challenging to figure out where to give it away? Or do you want to be cursed and be short all the time? It's your call. You can choose. God won't make you do either one, and neither will I. Well, here's the mid-year report. So this is the financial stuff in mid-year. What's the financial picture of the church? We own the parsonage, the church property, and last year we also dropped Camp Adelaide into our nonprofit and corporation. We have money in investments. We give to the denomination. We give to Camp Adelaide. We also give to missionaries. We have giving income, and we have expenses. So, let me break that down for you a little bit. So we own the parsonage and the church property. What's its value? I don't know. It's insured for over 100. You know, in realistic terms, if God struck it with lightning and burned it all up, we'd probably be worth more than if we tried to sell it. But we own it all. What happened is a few years ago when the Catholic Church got sued for $155 million, the boys in the big part of the denomination said, ooh, boy. And in the 1830s, we set up a trust fund and we put all our churches nationally into this trust fund. If someone sued our church denomination, they could wipe out the whole denomination because it's all in one trust fund. So they decided to break it all up. And the good news is we got a church and a parsonage that we own. Then it And a part of changing things last year, Camp Adeline, which was owned by the conference and the denomination, needed to go someplace. And rather than send $6,000 or $7,000 to set up a new nonprofit tax, we just said, well, one of the churches just volunteer to drop it into theirs. We were the only volunteer. So I tell people all the time, I accidentally inherited a church camp. But, you know, that technically is in ours, although practically it's governed by church board. The bottom line practical side of it is it's in our nonprofit. So we're responsible for it, and it's an asset we could. We also have money in investments. We have about $100,000 in investments right now. We got $20,000 that's in a money market thing that Lori can write checks on 6 or 7 times a month that we make good interest on. Then we have 4 CDs, $20,000 each, and they mature about every 3 months. Every 3 months we roll them back over because we will probably need capital somewhere along the way. We have those rolling over, and then basically in a 3 month cycle, and Edward Jones manages those for us. So that's the good news. How's that all break down? The denomination, the conference, gave us a grant of $67,000 for this experiment called me learning to be a pastor for 3 years. And that's where right now my salary comes out of that grant. We also have $16,000 in a building fund, $8,000 in a kitchen fund, almost $3,000 in memorials, a little over $2,000 in outreach funds, and $7,500, give or take, in checking and savings. Lori's checking and savings goes from 5 to 10, depending. We pull money out of investments. Giving goes in and out of there. But basically, we got around $104,000 in cash assets laying around. Now, some of that's dedicated towards a roof. That's the good news. We got money in the bank. You know, actually, we own the property. We don't pay taxes on the property. We got money in the bank. That's the good news. Now it begins to get challenging. We give to our denomination. One of the Sundays soon, I'll give you a complete missions report on a mission Sundays. If you make a gift out and you direct it towards anything specific, like missions, kitchen, building, wherever you direct it, that's where Lori and St. Deb put it. So you can write a check, put it on the bottom of it, put it in here, and it goes immediately to there. Now, what happens is we take the gross amount of money that's given and we subtract from that what we're giving to missions, what we're setting aside for our building fund, and then we give about 3.5% of that to the denominational headquarters. And we do that voluntarily. You don't have to do that anymore in the United Brethren Church. We volunteer to give that to them, to support them. But that's, I pulled that out of my top of my head, Lori. Is that close, 3.5? Ah! I was going to say, either took it out of the top of my head or another part of my anatomy. That's pretty close. So, now let's take a look at our income and expenses. We have money that comes in every week, every month in income, and we have outgoing expenses. The fact is, we spend more than we take in. And actually, when you start looking at these numbers, last board meeting, when I saw how much we took in and how much we spent, I said, you know, I should talk to the church about giving. Because there's an amazing deficit. Each month, we take from our investments, we take money out of our investment money to pay our expenses. So, here's what it looks like. In December, our income was 54 and we spent 47. Now, that's a good deal, right? When you take in more money than you spend, that's a good deal. Also, in that month, we got $64,000 in one big check, which just freaked Lori out. What am I supposed to do with all of this money? You know? And after her and Doug decided they weren't going to buy another house or go on a trip, we decided to invest it. In January, we took in 36, but we spent 75. You know, if that was your house and you did that, if you lived at my house, my wife would say, Wilmer, we can't do this. We can't spend more money than we make. In February, we did pretty good, 58. We spent 40, 54. So, we're actually 400 to good. Look at in March, we took in 44, but we spent 68. That's not a good deal. Look at April, we took in 78. That's a good month of giving, but we spent over $11,000. See, so, that's big math difference, thousands of dollars difference. May, we took in 38, spent 47, and June was the one that really tripped my trigger because we took in 26, but we spent 5. We spent twice as much money as we took in. I said, well, you can't run a business like that. If I was running this as a business, I'd say, we're in big trouble. You can't consistently take from your investments to pay your expenses. And I don't think that many people outside the board realize the financial picture of the church. So on a regular basis, I'll put the ugly numbers in front of you, or the good numbers, depending on which side of the balance sheet you're looking at. But the fact is, the church can't continue for an extended period of time like that. So our total giving was 33.4. That averages 48 a month. Our expenses were 45. That averages 65. So we average about $1,700 short, or 11 grand plus a year. You can't run a home or a business or a church like that for an extended period of time. It's going to eat up all of our investments, and then we don't have capital investments to do the things that we need to do. So it's an important thing for you to understand. The questions in conclusion of this message is, what's God saying to me about my giving? And the second one is a hypothetical question. If all of us just gave the minimum 10%, would we still be short? They tell me in the Church of Jesus Christ in this generation, if the people who claim to be born again would just give the minimum tithe, we would have over $3.4 trillion a year extra to try to figure out what to do with. After we paid all our church expenses, after we supported all of our missionaries, we'd have trillions of dollars that we'd have to figure out what to do with. The literal reality is, if we would just do the minimum that God suggests us to do in our generation, we could wipe out poverty almost worldwide. The church could establish small businesses and reestablish whole countries with the money the church had left over. I think that would honor God. I think that each one of us should take a look. I put my numbers up there, and it's nothing to brag about. 5% in giving and just tithing, that's nothing to brag about. It's really the lower end of it. So I'm not doing great at that. But my challenge is to you, as Marty and the folks come up to lead us in a last hymn, for you to get before the Lord, get with your wife, get with your husband, and talk about giving. Giving to the church, giving to missions, I should say tithing to the church, giving to missionaries and missions. But I think that if we desire financial freedom, that's something that we should look at. So, I think they have hymn number 48, Come Thou Almighty King, to close us.